Welcome to this episode of Interview with an MVP. Today's chat, we're going to have with us Clint Wyckoff. Clint comes to us today hailing from Phoenix, Arizona. Clint, why don't you say hi to the viewers?
Hi, viewers.
Clint, is there something wrong?
No, everything's okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sad because you don't know the release date of Windows Server 2016?
Yeah, I can't figure it out.
I think you're sad.
I'm really sad.
Why are we here?
We are here today to discuss with the viewers the most hot and pressing topics about Windows Server 2016 Hyper-V.
Like, first of all, how to get Dave back in color.
How to get Dave back in color. Hey there, David. Welcome back, Dave. It's like Back to the Future. It's like 1955, and you just came back.
Black and white TV.
Yeah, man. Okay.
Had one of those.
So, we're going to talk about Hyper-V. We're going to answer some questions that were passed along that Dave and I received during a recent webinar that we did on, you know, all you need to know about Hyper-V 2016 virtualization. So, without further ado, this is part four of a four-part series. We originally thought it was going to be three parts. However, we are quite verbose. We talk a lot, so we are going to make it part four.
It's actually based on viewers' requests.
The viewers wanted to hear more. So
They wrote in.
This episode is going to be all about containers because containers are a huge part of Windows Server 2016. So before we can talk about containers, we need to understand what they are. Dave, what is a container? And I have some visual aids. If you want to start the discussion, I can bring some stuff up and we can talk through this with the viewers. So Dave, what are containers? Well, I kind of...
The easiest way that I can explain a container to people that really don't understand the concept, it's like a micro server, even smaller than a nano server. It's a micro instance.
It's a micro service, right? Because it's an individual.
It is
kernel environment, right? So if we
So with containers, one of the big use cases for containers today is web services and web applications are a big use case for containers today. And ironically enough, Clint, I had a conversation with a client today specifically around containers and, you know, their planned use cases for containers. You know what their answer to me was?
What was their answer?
None. We don't know what containers are. And this was actually a conversation that I had with the development team.
Right.
And so basically, as Clint's opening up a whole bunch of stuff in behind the scenes, which is cool.
We're good. We got a lot going on here. It makes the productions possible for you folks.
So basically, they have a very traditional approach to IT. DevOps really hasn't even come into the equation for them yet in anything that they're doing. They've heard of it. They've read a couple things, a few blog posts about it. But what they're doing right now, which is completely the inverse thing of what containers are offering us, Clint, is, you know, they're trying to split off web services and roles and applications that they're running inside of their organization. And their plan is to build about a dozen new IIS servers running on Server 2012 R2. And that's their idea of being able to split those resources.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of additional infrastructure. And, you know, our good friend at Microsoft, Jeffrey Snover, has a good quote that says, only install what you need. Only use what you need. And so the problem with building a full-bore OS, installing IIS, installing all the underlying components, is that it's more than what you actually need for, you know, that service or that application that's running. So why not compartmentalize, you know, that instance or that website or service that's running into its own, I hate to use the word, almost like bubble inside of the OS.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually led into another very interesting part of that conversation was, well, if we have all these, you know, micro segmented services, almost like mini servers running within a server, how do we back all this stuff up? And I said, that's a really good question. And we've actually got a lot of active debate going around our community with this today, is that when you have a container of these services, because really it introduces the concept of disposable IT, it's Absolutely. Almost faster to deploy a new container than it would be to go through a restore mechanism.
Well, there's a lot of different things, a lot of different components of an environment that you brought up there, Dave, and you brought up a lot of valid and really good points. You know, the first one of being, you know, kind of the disposable mentality. So think about, you know, retail operations, right, where I have a peak busy part of the month, of the quarter, of the year, and I need to rapidly stand up a set of web servers to handle an influx of anticipated, you know, traffic that's going to be coming to my website. So instead of putting in a request to the VM administrator, the VM administrator has to provision the virtual machines. Yep. He's got to add it to the domain and all that stuff. You know, containers are a fantastic way of being able to scale out on demand as well as scale back on demand. So I've got the container operating system, and in this instance and in this environment, that's going to be Windows Server 2016. Hey,
Clint,
yes.
Clint, we just dropped the video in the call.
Oh, geez. Okay.
See if we can get this back.
A little Skype 101 here. We still have audio connectivity. However, we lost video.
I am back.
All right. One, two. We'll have one of two. Two
there
of
we go.
Two. Call. This is, we are using Skype, folks.
There we go. We're good.
And start. So, yes, absolutely. We're back up. We're back running, folks. Sorry about that small little snafu. Anyhow, without further ado, back at it. So, yeah, you know, being able to rapidly scale up and scale back, you know, the concept of containers allows us to have a parent OS or a container OS image that we can deploy from. So it's a quote, I don't want to say gold image, but it's like it's master repository that we can deploy from. And from there, I can have, you know, IIS being an option, a web server, where I can have those spin up on demand as well as scale back on demand. And it's very simple. It's very easy to do that, where each operating system, each container is its own instance, its own processing, its own kernel, its own environment, completely segmented away from the hardware level. It doesn't care anything about the underlying infrastructure. It doesn't care about the CPU. It doesn't care about the memory. It doesn't care about any of that stuff. Completely different from virtualization, where it's hardware-based virtualization. I have virtual CPU, virtual network, virtual hard disk, virtual HBAs, all that type of stuff. Containers are application virtualization. And in Hyper-V 2016, you know, there's actually three different types of containers. You know, there's the standard Windows container. There's Docker container. So Windows Server 2016 adds full support for Docker Hub if you're using that framework or that OpenStack project to manage, you know, your container operating systems. Regardless if they're Server 2016 or Linux-based containers, but then Hyper-V. Dave, what's a Hyper-V container? What's the difference?
One of the issues that you run into with Windows containers is security and segmentation across those containers. And so, for example, in a multi-tenant type environment, if we just had Windows containers running, they would potentially be running inside of the same memory space inside of Windows OS. So Hyper-V containers are basically instances of a Hyper-V guest that would be running a Windows container, completely segmented, isolated, and independent of one another.
Yeah. So the only difference between a standard Windows container and a Hyper-V container is that the Hyper-V container is using virtualization technologies to separate those instances. Basically, as Dave said, right, isolate them completely 100% so that container B doesn't know that container A exists. They cannot speak with each other. They cannot communicate whatsoever with each other. Now, I can convert a Hyper-V container to a Windows container and back and forth via PowerShell. It's really simple. It is really easy to do. And we will provide some samples of how to do that in the notes.
Perfect. Should we take a few other questions here, Clint? I think, you know, how are we doing from a time perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we take a few more questions? And yeah, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Awesome. So I guess the next question that we have is, this one was a pretty good one, was around what type of bandwidth is required for a shared VHDX file to work properly. So let's, in a previous episode that we had, we discussed shared VHDX, and this came from a later webinar that we did. Is 1 gig network interface sufficient, or would you need 10 gig?
Yeah, so, I mean, from a shared virtual hard disk, I guess it depends if you're using, you know, traditional fiber channel, LUN-based storage, cluster shared volumes, or if I'm using, you know, iSCSI and Guest, that there's two different ways there to attach that block-based storage, or am I using some sort of remote SMB file-based storage? Now, that can either be through Storage Spaces Direct, scale-out file server, or if I have a completely separate storage subsystem that is non-Windows-based, hosting up an SMB3 share for my virtual machines to run on. So the answer to this viewer's question is definitely, we recommend at least 10 gigabit from a Ethernet perspective, TCP/IP stack. You know, fiber channel, 4 gig fiber cards is typically what we've traditionally seen has been good enough in the field. I mean, there's a lot of different up-and-coming technologies, InfiniBands, you know, starting to see, you know, gigabit speeds upwards of 40 gigabits per second. However, that's not required in most cases, unless you're, you know, trading stock on, you know, Wall Street, perhaps, where the, you know, even the slightest millisecond worth of latency matters. So I would definitely, while 1 gig is sufficient maybe for a test dev QA environment, now, you know, 10 gig probably is going to be required in a production environment.
Awesome, awesome. And what else have we got here? Are there any new enhancements that are coming inside of Hyper-V Manager for delegated administration?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And there are quite a few changes, and it's the little things in life that typically make administrators happy. Being able to manage multiple versions of Hyper-V, you know, Windows Server 2012 R2, Hyper-V 2016, that is a new feature of Hyper-V Manager. Being able to leverage alternate credentials. So in the past, you would have had to log into a Windows server with your administrator credentials or give your user account Hyper-V admin rights to manage Hyper-V. But when the latest iteration of Hyper-V Manager allows you to use alternate credentials, so you can use your administrator admin dash credentials to connect from your Windows 10 laptop or device.
That is pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff.
There's a lot of questions that we've covered in previous episodes. So, okay, here we go. What about licensing? Windows Server 2016 licensing. Do you still need Data Center Edition to be able to run unlimited Windows virtual machines? Yes, Data Center Edition provides unlimited licenses of Windows Server. So, yeah, you need the Data Center Edition for that. Standard Edition allows you to run two OSEs, and they call that operating system environment. You might see that if you're talking or working with your Windows licensing, right, administrator or reseller. And the Hyper-V, which is a completely free version of Windows Server, you just need to manage and license each one of those individual OSEs or operating system environments of Windows separately. Linux distributions you have to license on your own.
Now, Clint, I heard that there's going to be some changes that are coming for the licensing model for Windows Server 2016, and specifically around going to a per-core-based licensing model instead of a per-processor-based licensing model. Is there any truth to that?
There is some truth, and there's been some public documentation that's been on the Microsoft website. However, you know, in previous versions of Windows Server, Microsoft has announced licensing changes within technical preview versions, and that what has gone live at GA, whenever the software or the operating system actually goes live is different. So I wouldn't quote anything for certain as to what you see, but definitely reference the Microsoft literature in a simple search across the webs, the interwebs there. You'll find out the latest information. I mean, we can include the link to in the notes as well.
Awesome. Well, you know what, Clint? I always like to wrap these things up with, you know, some sneak peek type announcements. So, you know, we have a lot of our viewers of our interview with an MVP that also follow our MVP Dave's community roadshow.
Yeah.
And, you know, Clint, you've been a really good supporter of that roadshow over the past couple of iterations that we've had, which has been absolutely fantastic. And I would like to announce, we don't have a date yet, but we're going virtual with MVP Days, Clint. Yeah. And so now we're going to actually be able to have a global reach. So all those people that couldn't attend because, you know, travel or work restrictions, we're going to have a couple different dates that we'll start working on lining up. And stay tuned. Big announcement. And hopefully sometime over the summer, we'll be having two or three days that we'll be running our MVP Days VConf.
Is that what it's going to be? Is that the official title, MVP Days VConf?
It is now.
I just coined it.
Just announced it.
You know, one of the other things, that, just to make sure the viewers know what it is, right? MVP Hour, hashtag MVP Hour on Twitter. That's definitely a search string that you want to add, right? So on a regular basis, we get together and tweet out, you know, questions to each other from an MVP perspective. We have a large group of us across the world that participate in MVP Hour. So if there's ever any questions, you know, it's definitely in my Twitter stream as a tag that I follow. So on a regular basis and participate too.
Awesome. That's, you know, learning about this community stuff is really important, right? Because sometimes we take for granted that we've just got, you know, access to resources and, you know, we just assume that people know where to go. So, folks, check us out. MVP Hour, interview with an MVP. You know, this is going to be our 39th episode. Thank you so much for all of your support. Keep watching. And Clint and I and the other MVPs that are involved with this channel are going to keep trying to continue to bring you relevant and amazing content. So thank you guys very much.
Yeah, and in the show notes, again, our Twitter handles are out there. I'm at Clint Wyckoff, and Dave is at Dave Kawula. We're very active in the social media areas, so please check us out on the Twitters. Give us a follow. We really appreciate it. Let us know what you want to hear. Use the comments field, and we will catch you folks next time. So without further ado, Dave, it's always a pleasure, and we will chat with everyone again soon. See ya.
Thank you very much.